Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. You know, we've talked about adoption and foster care on this podcast for years now. But, you know, I want you to think about something, and I don't know that I've ever just bluntly said this, but why do adoptive and foster families have so many problems? And I feel like I could just write volumes on this, learning to trust the Lord through every single decision, every turn in the adoption process. So today I'm going to get some friends to help me talk about this and share their story. So Clint and Jennifer Clifton in D.C., thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. We're excited.
Great. So Clint and Jennifer, I know the Lord has built quite a large family for you guys. I understand. How did the Lord do all this? Tell us about your family, what you're doing with NAM, and just tell us how you got started in this ministry of adoption.
Well, I've been working with NAM now for 16 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Last year, I got my like 15-year pin with NAM, so that was exciting. we've been in ministry and church planting in the greater Washington area, and God's been really good to our family in terms of ministry and mission. We've just had lots of progress here, and it's been exciting to be plant a church and then lead that church to plant many other churches. And NAM's been such a great organization to work with along the way. But simultaneously, we had this, Jennifer particularly had this heart for adoption, and then we started having biological kids too. And so it didn't take long for our family to grow quite a lot.
Well, I know it's grown rather large, and some biological went through adoption, and you're even pursuing that calling again. Jennifer, tell us about your kids and your family.
Yeah, so we have a total of 5 kids currently. Our oldest, Noah, is 19. Ruthie is 16. Isaiah is 15. Bettina is 14. And Moses is 11. And then we're pursuing adopting an infant from Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow. Wow. So I know for us, the decision on where, like, Lord, are you leading our family domestically? You know, we had done a family placement, that sort of thing. But it was a big decision for Kevin and I, which way the Lord, you know, when he was moving in our heart for adoption, and we knew that he was, even just praying with our kids at night, and they would bring it up even if we hadn't mentioned it. It was just so amazing to see the Lord moving all of our hearts toward opening our home, you know, to a vulnerable child and to build our family that way. But how did the Lord lead you all to Haiti? Because to the right place was a big decision for our family, and it took a while, a lot of patience, a lot of prayer. How'd that happen for you all?
Yeah, so Haiti was really the only country that kept resurfacing. I didn't really have a place, like when I thought about adoption, like where I wanted to adopt from. But there was another family that I grew up knowing who I was probably maybe in college when they adopted a set of twins from Haiti, and I was just enamored by that. And then one of our high school teachers later on also adopted from Haiti. So when we felt like the Lord was leading us, okay, now's the time to adopt, we called our high school teacher and said, tell us about how you adopted from Haiti. We're very interested in this. And she put us in the right direction and who to contact and all of that.
What's Haiti like now? Like, is it still open? What's the process? Do you guys kind of have an update on that?
You know, Haiti wasn't really open when we started,
yeah,
which is part of the problem. When we had an initial conversation with Jenny, our high school teacher, and she had been in a long adoption journey with Hope, her daughter, her Haitian daughter. And basically what she told us was that, you know, the process wasn't really settled, that Haiti wasn't even officially open. And the only reason she got Hope home was because of the earthquake that happened in January of 2010.
Wow.
You might have heard they put all the kids that were in process, in adoption process, on a plane right after the earthquake and sent them home, you know, and kind of worked out the details later. And so that was sort of a miraculous thing for Jenny. And we're just kind of, I don't know, it's our personality, but we loved that faith story, you know, the story of like, I'm going to pursue this thing, even though we don't know how to work out. And so when I talk about our long adoption journey of 9 years, people say, how'd you put up with that? Or gosh, that was really difficult. And it's like, honestly, we got into this knowing it was going to be precarious. And we were just very determined to see it through no matter what it took. And we knew that it would take some miraculous things along the way. So I don't want to blame it on Haiti. Haiti didn't say to us, this is going to be smooth and easy. The people that were advising us did say they thought it would take about 2 years, and they did see a path for it to happen, but it was all very kind of speculative, and it wasn't firm, I'll say. Right. So, yeah.
Right. And Ethiopia was the same way for us. Right after, it wasn't too long after we got out, several adoptions were completed of friends that we know that we help. Everything shut down because of that. It took you 9 years. Like, is that from like when the first time you filed your paperwork to Haiti to kind of to bring baby home?
Yeah, it was 9 years from the. So we measure that time from when we met her and made the decision. But we pretty much submitted the first sets of paperwork right after that. It was within 4 to 6 months from the time we met Bettina and decided to adopt to the time we had submitted the first paperwork and the payments and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a pretty, once we knew that the Lord was calling us to do it, we took as definitive of action as we could, you know, to do that. So yeah, pretty much 8.5-9 years was the whole process from start to finish.
Well, that gave you quite a while to raise money and get it all together, because I tell you, it takes a long time. You know, I've often wondered, Lord, why can't we just go to the mailbox and get a big fat check, right? But I know for us, at every turn, it's like we would hit a roadblock. Did you guys ever feel that way? You had to have been 8 years, 8.5-9 years.
Yeah, for sure. It felt like everything was really hard to accomplish.
Oh, I know.
And we did have a lot of things that happened on the ground in Haiti that were, you know, I mean, people weren't delivering our paperwork like they said they had.
Oh, yeah.
Then people, whoever the courier was, you know, held it for ransom, and then they wanted extra money to like deliver the paperwork. So, I mean, everything just seemed way harder than it had to be.
We've heard these stories from other families I've had on here. What do you do when paperwork, if you don't mind me asking, like, because people may find themselves in this position when they go to a country that maybe doesn't have a very stable government or has been through an earthquake and they're trying to regroup. They've had a natural disaster. It affects all parts of the country, especially the most vulnerable. What do you do, like, when someone's holding your paperwork for ransom? Or how do you how did you guys have the wisdom to know how to navigate those things?
We didn't have any wisdom.
we fly by the seat of our pants is what we do. That's right.
Exactly. We, in that situation, I mean, there were a lot of situations that weren't great that we could go through one by one. In that situation particularly, we were caught off guard by it. We didn't really know it was an option that somebody could hold our paperwork for ransom. And so when we got that call, we were completely unprepared for that. We had just kind of blindly trusted whoever they deemed was trustworthy, you know? And so that when that happened, we didn't know what to do. They basically said, you either have to pay this money or you have to start over again, which we had already done. And we were really tired. And what we thought was the end of our rope, we didn't know we were only a quarter of the way through the rope, but we thought it was the end of our rope. And so we were like, no, you can't do that anymore. So we pretty much didn't see any option other than pay the money. And so we talked to folks and got advice, and everybody that we talked to, in fairness, said, don't pay the money. It won't make a difference. It won't help. But we felt stuck. We were between a rock and a hard place, so to speak. And so we did it. We came up with the money and and delivered it. And within a day of the time we delivered it, he had said he wanted more, you know? So it was like, it was clear then that everyone's advice was right. And we had just kind of thrown the money away. So,
yeah, that's good to know, because we hear this happen quite often. Families who share with me, folks who email me, and it's just, you just feel so helpless. It truly is a step of faith where you just have to trust the Lord through the process, because he just doesn't give us the answers up front. I think that's a prime example, Clint, and I appreciate your transparency, because it just does happen. And it happens quite often, especially when governments aren't very stable. I know there was some time you were in Haiti. I love this story, because we did almost the very same thing on a mission trip one time. Where you loaded up a bunch of kids in Haiti and wanted to give them a day out. You share with us that story. I love it.
So we wanted to do something really special for the kids. And so we decided that somehow, I don't even remember how, we rented this big school bus to take them all to the beach.
And this is in Haiti. You're in Haiti.
In Haiti, okay. Yes. And it was probably, I don't know, maybe 30-minute, 45-minute drive to the beach from where they were living at the time. And there was probably 35 to 45 kids. And a few of the workers went with us as well. And so we were so excited. We're going to take the kids for a fun day, go to the beach, play in the water. We were probably not 10 minutes down the road. Every kid was getting car sick. It was hot. With the windows open. I mean, they were just throwing up left and right. It was all running down the bus floor. It was so disgusting. And we were looking at each other like, what have we done? It did not even cross our minds. Like, we're about to put 40 kids on a bus who never ride in a car,
right,
let alone a giant bus.
Yes.
So thankfully we got to the beach. Everyone got cleaned off, had a fun day. It was great. And nobody got sick on the way back, thankfully.
Wow. And so you were able to make it to the beach, because I know that feeling of, this is such a great idea. We're going to give these kids a great experience. And you scrape money together. I remember that we took a bunch of kids in Asia one time to a little amusement park that was like a rundown, shut down amusement park. But they had never been out of their building, really, like you were talking about. And we just thought that was such a grand idea at the time. And we're like, you guys, it landed okay. But when you were sharing that story on the stories that you've shared on bringing home baby, I just had to laugh with you guys, because I have been there. But so the day at the beach turned out okay, right?
It turned out okay once we got there.
So were your kids with you, the rest of your kids? Were they with you in Haiti on this trip?
Not that trip. I think that was the first trip we went on. And that was the one trip that we were together, because all the other trips afterwards, Clint would go down with one of our biological kids, and then I would go down with a different kid. But that trip, Clint and I were together, and no kids were with us.
Well, when you would take your kids at different times, did that, which is a little more doable to Haiti than, like, say, Asia or India, something like that, but did that kind of help change their perspective? That's a great idea for you to take one at a time as you needed to go to work on paperwork or finalize things. Did that kind of help them see what the need, or kind of help bring clarity to your kids?
I think it did. It was, and that was the whole reason why we wanted to take each of them down there. And it was good to take on one, because it was good one-on-one time for whichever parent was going and whichever kid. But they got to meet the kids that we were trying to adopt and see the situation that they were living in and the country that they were going to be coming from, and just the conditions of what was going on in Bettina's life at the time. So it gave them a better understanding, and they were definitely like, there's lots of conversations like, how does this life here in Haiti compare to what you're used to? And because, you know, it was hot, there's not air conditioned, all the showers are ice cold. And it's like, okay, so when you're at home, you know, think about this. And so it provoked a lot of really good conversations, and then they totally got a better idea of what life in Haiti is like and what Bettina's life has been like before coming home to us. So it was very helpful.
That's invaluable. You really couldn't teach that at home, I don't think. I mean, you can see pictures, and, you know, we've always, our son's been to Haiti several times to just do grunt work. And not that he mm-hmm. loved it, but we thought it would be good character building. You know, now he doesn't regret it at all. He's glad he did it. And the older girls who are now married with their own children, we would send them on mission trips or just to, you know, help out missionaries or to bring, you know, just to give them some respite with their own kids that while they were on the field. And it was in the best things that we did. The Lord gave us the wisdom to do that and help us get the money together. I just think that's a great idea. How long were you going down to Haiti and spending time with Bacina and getting to know the other kids? How long was this going on?
We over the course of the entire adoption journey, really, although the last 2 years before we brought her home, I don't think we had gone at all. It sort of, all the kids had gone and we'd cycled through that. And we were originally the idea of taking all the kids down was because we thought the journey was going to be 2 years. And we were like, man, what are we going to do with this 2 years? We want to redeem that time in some way. So we thought, you know, it's a double win to get to know the kids when we go down and for our kids, our biological kids, to get to experience their context. And so that was the thought, but we did that. And then we stretched that out and still we finished it and had lots of time left in our adoption journey still. But I wanted to say too, to the point that Jennifer was making, it was good for our kids to see the context. But another thing it did that I can say now, a year after Bettina's been home, that I didn't necessarily anticipate, is that it's given our biological kids patience and understanding with what Bettina is going through, you know? So when she's, you know, they just know the context she's come from. They know where she's lived. They know some of her friends in the children's home. So when she's sad about missing friends from the children's home and she's sad about missing Sue or, you know, the director or whatever, they know those people, and they're able to be compassionate in a way that I don't think they would have been had they not been there, met them, experienced that.
That is such a great point, Clint. And I totally agree, because I found myself with my kids trying to explain to them, especially those who didn't, maybe they'd done mission work, you know, or gone and helped with a project, but had not really been into an orphanage or a children's home. It is hard to explain that. And, you know, it's really hard to help them kind of grasp what it's like, because I mean, I was like you guys, went inside, sat on the floor, ate with the kids, you know, Kevin and I, kids crawling all over us, and really your heart just bonds with them, and then you have to leave, you know. And so I think that's such a great point, and I just think that's a blessing the Lord allowed you guys to take your kids down there one at a time and just let them really see it, smell it, touch it, put their arms around it, and their hearts really begin to have mercy and compassion for children who are waiting, you know, waiting for a family.
Yeah. Another thing that's cool about it, this is a side note, but now Bettina's home, she's been home for a year. We've got pictures all over our walls of her with our kids at young ages when she was, you know, and that's cool too. I mean, we've got a picture of Bettina on Noah, our 19-year-old's back when he was like 10 or 12, or I don't know how old he was, but, you know, like him carrying her through the village on his back. And that's just a cool memory, you know, that those are, they don't have a whole lifetime of sibling memories, but they do have, you know, a few, and those are important.
I love that. So you have them all over the walls at home?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, that, and that solidifies to Bettina that I am, you know, I am in this family. You know, they pursued me. That is just, it makes me want to cry. That's just a beautiful picture there. You know, I know you guys waited, like you said, 8.5, 9 years. Can you think of some things the Lord really taught you in this waiting time? Because you're saying you thought it was going to take about 2 years, which is about normal for an international adoption. But what are some things the Lord really kind of taught you guys to this waiting? Maybe speak to some families who are getting a little weary in this process.
What comes to mind for me is that I'll let Jennifer speak to the weariness piece. But one thing I'll say is that the process, you just got to kind of set your mind. The process is going to be difficult. Yeah. I mean, there, you don't ever hear of an international adoption process that just goes, you know, really smooth and is really cheap. You know, that's, so I think everybody goes into it optimistic. They're going to be the one that it's going to go unusually smooth for, and it's going to be unusually, it's going to be less expensive than anticipated or whatever. And I just want to say to everybody who's thinking about going into this, it's going to be one of the hardest things you've ever done, but it's totally worth it. Absolutely worth it. But it's going to be really, really hard. And it's better if your mindset is prepared for a really difficult run.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think adoption is just a prime example of how the Lord uses difficulties and asks us to step into a crisis or hard things. And, you know, for Kevin and I, and maybe Clint and Jennifer, you'd agree to this, God uses that to bring us from where we are, you know, where we have this, like you said, Clint, this picture in mind, like, oh, it'll go better for our family, or ours will go quickly, or, man, everything's just fall into place. It won't be that expensive for us, you know, and us seasoned ones want to chuckle at that, right? But the Lord uses all that to get us from where we are. And for all these ideas we have, you know, all of our little points on paper, our plans, to where he really needs us to be. And, man, I just, you sharing about taking your kids down there and the weight. And I can't imagine the things the Lord has worked out in your family that just don't come out of a textbook.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, I mean, adoption's not easy. It hasn't been easy on the kids that you're pursuing. It's not easy trying to figure out the paperwork. And I think you just have to go into it mentally knowing and rest in the fact that you are 100% confident God called your family to do this. And you just have to trust that he's going to provide for all the things. He's going to protect you from all the craziness that's going to happen. And you should just expect craziness is going to happen, because these kids have experienced all kinds of stuff in their life, and it's going to be hard for them. And I mean, sometimes we can go into it thinking we're rescuing these kids, but this is all they've really known, so they don't necessarily view it as they're being rescued from hardness. But I think knowing and resting in the fact that, you know, God called us to do this, and he's not going to fail us. And he's just going to provide and protect us however our process ends up.
And I would say, in addition to that, too, like, when you go into a lot of families that I have seen in the adoption journey, they get what I consider too emotionally involved in the early stage process. Obviously, you have to be emotionally involved to do this, but that they'll say things like, you know, that they'll see themselves as like an opponent to the government of the country where the kids are coming from, or the powers that be there that are delaying the process, instead of seeing themselves as allies for the good of these children. The truth is, the Bettina and John, the kids we were pursuing to adopt, they were not our children. They were the wards of the Haitian government at the time. And so because of that, I could act like these are my kids and Haiti's keeping my kids from me. But that's just not helpful for the adoption process at all. It's not helpful for my mindset, for my, you know, sort of mental, spiritual, emotional health. The truth is, like, I'm not entitled to those children. Because I decided I want to adopt them doesn't mean that Haiti has to do what I say or what I want. So I think early in our adoption process, somebody advised me that way. They said, like, these are not your kids. You know, you're praying, you're asking God for the opportunity to become their parents, but until Haiti gives them to you, they're not your children. And so that was such a helpful mindset for me, just to go into this not thinking these are mine, somebody's holding them from me, but these are children that are Jesus's and Haiti's, and I'm petitioning for the opportunity to become their parents. And that made me a lot more patient throughout the journey. Made both of us a lot more patient throughout the journey.
I think this is a great place to pause today. Clint and Jennifer have much more wisdom to share about their adoption story. So make sure to join in for part two with Clint and Jennifer Clifton as we discuss the relentless pursuit of adoption. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.